You want to see something cool?
Hello.
Hello and welcome to episode 61 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hi.
Hey, everybody.
So we're going to jump right into it this week and start with our hot topic, which is Game of Thrones. And Angie, you're going to take that one.
Yeah, so I know we're always like, this is a podcast that's all about movies, but today, for 5 minutes, it's going to be about TV. Because this Sunday is the season 5 premiere of Game of Thrones, which, to be fair, has been described as a very cinematic experience, so I feel good about this. And we just wanted to take a couple minutes to talk about what we're looking forward to. So I am really looking forward to finding out what happens with Tyrion, who, spoiler, if you remember, at the end of last season, he escaped after being convicted of killing Joffrey, which he did not do, and then actually killing Tywin. And in all the trailers, he and Varys, so they went on the ship, and in all the trailers, it looks like him and Varys finally meet up with Daenerys. So I'm excited about this, first of all, just because Tyrion is one of my favorite characters, just like, you know, for everyone else. But also because Daenerys' plotline has seemed really isolated for the past 4 seasons in that she barely crosses over with any of the other characters, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens when she actually interacts with some of the other characters. Assuming that happens, we don't know for sure yet, but that's what the trailers make it look like.
All right, I'm really excited about Arya. I know all my information, I swear. At the end of the last season, she's on a boat to who knows where, and she thinks all of her family is dead. And as EW revealed, like, a week ago, she's got a pretty dress on, and she wears makeup and all this crazy stuff. I can't imagine a world where Arya Stark thinks it's okay to dress up and wear makeup, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what gets her to do that.
I love that, like, Game of Thrones is all about, like, violence and, like, politics and, like, blood and sex, and you're like, I can't wait to see Arya.
Especially that it's Perry, our like, personal queen of gore horror.
It's
is
fine.
Like, I like the dresses.
You do know what's gonna happen. She's gonna be all dolled up in her new outfit, and she's gonna whip out needle and fucking stab the shit out of someone, and is gonna be, like, covered in blood, and that's it. And I'll be satisfied.
Word. Fair. There you go. There's the girl we know.
Yes.
And I'm really stoked about the Sand Snakes. I actually don't read ahead of the show, so I like to be surprised. So I know that the Sand Snakes are a thing because I cover this for job. I know that they are.
I cover for job. Sand Snakes.
I won awards at Army. I cover for job. I'm really excited about the Sand Snakes because I know they're from Dorne. I know they're going to be pissed about what happened to Oberyn last season, and I am too. And I know that we got 3 exciting lady assassin types coming at us, and I'm stoked about it. I like wrote about, for Pop Crush, I wrote about the women of Game of Thrones, like, ranked on levels of badassness, and the Sand Snakes aren't included because it's just up to this point. But, like, you check it out because I am stoked about this season.
I'm really noticing a theme here with, you know, ladies who can murder you.
Yeah. We like the ladies who can murder you. That's
apparently
such a good transition.
We like bald guys and ladies who can murder.
We do like
that's
the bald
guys. That's all we care
too.
About on this show.
The bald guys would have worked for last. Yeah, that's, yeah, that works.
All right, did we want to use that as some sort of transition? I don't know if it worked anymore. I think I kind of ruined it.
No, it worked. Because this movie has a bald guy and a scary lady who's pretty badass.
Oh, that's fair. All right, so on to our big review of the week, which is Ex Machina. And it is about a young programmer is selected to participate in a breakthrough experiment in artificial intelligence by evaluating the human qualities of a breathtaking female AI. That's pretty much what it's about. And I'm going to say his name wrong, and Christy's going to judge me, but Domhnall Gleeson is the young programmer, and Oscar Isaac plays this, you know, huge billionaire guy who's a genius, and he has this house that is secluded out in the middle of nowhere where he's busy working on this experiment, which is the AI, which is played by Alicia Vikander, and he gets Domhnall Gleeson's character to come out there as some. This is one thing that got me, though, in the beginning. It just kind of happens in a split second, and it really sweeps you up in it in an instant, and then you get out there, and You're really with his character that whole time, but then once they get out there, this is my big problem with the movie, it slows a lot. And it's like, right at the beginning, I was really into his character where I could really relate to him. Because what average person doesn't dream of, you know, this message popping up in their computer being like, you won the chance of a lifetime. And I'm like, yeah, I want to go see what that is. And then once I saw what it is, I'm like, cool.
Oh, cool. I didn't think it slowed down at all. I mean, you're right. It's not like a fast action-packed thrill ride or anything, but it's, you know, I felt like Alex Garland, this is his first time directing, but he's written a lot of great sci-fi scripts for movies that people love, including me. And I felt like he did a really good job of kind of ramping up the tension and, like, it's a really talky movie. So much of this movie is just, like, people sitting around talking, but I felt like he still did a really good job of making it. Oh, I wasn't bored at all. Like, I was
because
really, like, dying to see where it was going.
Every scene feels like a ratchet of the tension, because what's so interesting is you have these three characters and their connections to each other are confusing and perplexing, and it becomes what I like so much about this movie, which I am obsessed about this movie. I've seen it twice already, and I like that it starts off and you're like, oh, it's a sci-fi movie, but then it starts becoming this interesting drama, and then it starts becoming a psychological thriller, and then there are elements of that are like kind of farcical comedy, and then there's like a fairy tale aspect to it. And none of this stuff should be able to collide together to make a beautiful movie, but it does. I found this movie so effective, so exciting, and, like, really funny and poignant. And I had such a visceral reaction to it that I wanted to go again. And I think I'm going to go again this weekend.
I think my biggest problem was that I had no reaction to it. It's like I kept looking at things and thinking they were cool, but it never kind of, like, hit me on a deeper level. It was like I was just watching these three people who were who they were do this thing.
Well, I want to say something about that, because so the first, I've only seen it once, and immediately after I saw it, I think I was a little bit more like Perry, where I was like, oh, you know, I loved it, but it didn't, like, resonate emotionally as well, and I kind of felt like it loses sight of who, like, Domhnall Gleeson's character is and what he's doing. But then the more I thought, like, it's a movie that kind of stuck with me, though, so then I kept thinking about it over the next couple days, and the more I thought about it and the more I started to dig into it in my head, the more I started to love the movie. And I think, to me, the key was realizing that, so the movie sets itself up as being about Domhnall Gleeson's character. It's really not. Without spoiling too much, by the end, it's really more Ava's story. And I feel like in my head, like, once I kind of figured that out, that was the key to making me understand. Like, I looked back at it and kind of saw all the scenes in a different light, and I understood a lot better how it fit together.
And
I mean, not that it's a confusing movie, just in terms of, like,
sure,
the emotional narrative.
Because it does something you don't expect. It basically does switch protagonists. And what's interesting is, so I watched it the first time and I was just like, wow, that was really exciting. And then when I watched it again, knowing what was coming, I started picking up all these clues to what was coming. And it was like, it reminded me of Snowpiercer, where the first time I watched it, I had a blast. And the second time I watched it, I got to really enjoy all these little hints in the production design and hints in lines and things like that, that are setting up a world I wasn't paying attention to the first time, and setting up arcs that, like, are much deeper than I had realized. And, like, I had such a good time with this movie. I just thought it's so smart. It's insane that it's a directorial debut. And, like, it's a low-budget movie that in no way feels low-budget. Like, I got to interview Alicia and Oscar yesterday, and one of the things that they told me was that the film was not shot with a green screen suit, which is what I assumed, because her robot body looks so amazing. That metal mesh look was the entire suit, and then basically in post they were like, okay, so what can we go over? And she said initially they weren't even going to do the head and neck. It was just like they didn't have the budget for it initially. And, you know, I'm assuming that what happened was they showed, like, a rough cut to someone and they were like, oh, no, we're going to put more money in this because this is beautiful. Because, like, A24 has been doing such exciting films, and I just think this is incredible. I think this is not just a great sci-fi movie. I think this is a movie from 2015 people are going to talk about all year. And I think that this is going to be, like, I think it's a masterpiece. I think people are going to keep coming back to it for decades. I think this is, like, this is, to me, watching this movie and Ava and that whole thing, it was like watching Jurassic Park for the first time. I'm serious.
Wow. The gauntlet.
Perry's having,
like,
a meltdown.
Grown.
I mean it. Like, because, like, when I watched Jurassic Park when I was, like, in third grade, and the row, like, you know, you're looking at the dinosaurs, and, like, I knew dinosaurs weren't real, like, weren't alive anymore at that point, but the movie made me believe that they have to be, right? And, like, watching this movie, I know Alicia Vikander is an adorable Swedish ingenue, but, like, watching the movie, you're like, no, she is a robot. They're, like, your lizard brain is just freaking out about it. I love this. I think it's just beautifully designed from nuts to bolts.
Yeah, I think if you go into this movie expecting Jurassic Park, you're going to be incredibly,
I don't mean tonally. I mean, like, as far as, like,
I know what you mean.
A marriage of visual effects and performance, it's amazing.
wish
I don't understand how this is. And you saw this at South By. That blows my mind.
And I was the only, I was basically the only one who walked out. You know, I think I was their lowest grade. And I don't want to talk about it like I hated this movie, because I didn't hate it. I think it has some interesting ideas, and the production design is kind of through the roof. And I think his shots are incredible, too. There's some, you could freeze frame the large majority of this movie and land on a beautiful image. But my biggest problem with the movie is that all three of those characters felt incredibly robotic to me.
Wow. Where I wasn't supposed to be, so, you know.
Well, I wasn't, like, part of their thought process at all, and I kind of knew exactly what they were after the moment I met them, and that's kind of where they ended up. Like, I think I was on to what she was doing the whole time, too. And then when the end happened, I was kind of like, yeah. Yeah, that is
That's interesting. I was really, I mean, I agree with you that I think Caleb is our entry point, where, you know, he's Charlie with the golden ticket. He comes storming in and he gets to see what all the cool things that, like, you know, he's a coder also, I feel like we should point out, because it's not like he's just some schmuck on the street that won the lottery. Like, he works for the company Nathan owns. So, like, he has an awareness of this stuff to a degree. But, like, he gets to see this incredible world, but then, like, he's not prepared for kind of the strings of this situation. And I thought it was really interesting and fun. I thought the performances were so smart, and the visuals, this movie affected me on a level like Under the Skin did last year, where it was just like fucking with my head, and I loved it.
I feel like I would have liked it just slightly more if I hadn't seen Under the Skin before, because I loved Under the Skin so much, and there, without spoiling anything, there are some things that are very similar between the two movies. So it didn't quite reach that level.
It's funny because I was one of few who was not into Under the Skin.
Either. I know.
That makes more sense to me.
It just maybe speaks to my taste in movies more so than the quality of this movie, which I will definitely admit.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the performances, because Oscar Isaac in this, all three of them give very, very good performances. Like, it's such a small cast. It's literally three of them, and then there's like one other supporting character. So it wouldn't work if any of them were not on top of their game. They are all on top of their game, but Oscar Isaac is the standout, because you meet him and you're not really sure what to expect, because Caleb isn't really sure what to expect. And then you're immediately just like, what is this? Because he's kind of like if Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg had a baby who was really weird. And he's like got this like weird like macho thing going, but he's also really intellectual.
He says
he's
dude
like
a lot.
Really, like, he's like really kind of serious and awful, but also like really hilarious and weirdly charming. Like, he's like this bundle of contradictions that every moment he's on screen, he's fun to watch. But the most fun to watch is when he breaks out into a coordinated dance sequence.
You do know that scene is going to be on like everybody's top 10 scenes of the year list.
It's so beautiful. Because, like, on one level, you're like, what the fuck is happening? And then on another level, you're like, I don't care. I want this all the time. Like,
That's pretty fair.
I love that. It's just so out of nowhere. And I talked a little bit about him with that, too, where he had to, like, train and learn how to disco dance. I'm like, sure. Sure.
I feel like his character is the most opaque by the end of the movie, but I feel like that's also by design, because our entry point is Caleb, who doesn't really know him that well, and Ava, who does know him pretty well, but is kind of suspicious of him for reasons that are revealed later on.
Yeah, I just find this movie really extraordinary in obviously all respects, but like also the performances are just really cool. Like, and it's fun because I think it's Donald Gleason, and now I can't remember, so apologies.
Yeah, you've gotten in my head about that, and I can never say his name out loud now.
It's like, it's an Irish name.
Huh? Or just call him Buddy like Christy did. Or was that someone else?
No, that was, I called him Buddy. I called him Buddy when I did the Frank interviews, because I got so in my head about saying it wrong. And I was just like, so Buddy. And I was like, that was terrible.
Anyway.
There's video of that somewhere. Anyway. But like, he actually was in Black Mirror in an episode that was kind of the flip, where he played a robot, an android, which is pretty exciting. And so to watch those kind of two things, I don't know, I think this is really cool. And then, like, Alicia Vikander, it's crazy that she's a Swedish actress who did a Danish movie, and then she came over and did Seventh Son, and Anna Karenina. And, you know, she's just really killing it. She's just fantastic to watch and interesting to watch. And then Oscar Isaac is just, he is a charm bomb.
Yeah, I mean, Gleason and Isaac are already on their, they're in Star Wars. They're already on their way to being huge, but Vikander, I hope that she I think that she has a lot of potential, and I really look forward to seeing her get cast in some kind of major franchise that's going to make her household name, because that's how you become a star these days.
Her physical performance in this is also pretty through the roof. I mean, if it is like what you just explained, it was all on her to make that believable, and she certainly nails it.
She doesn't. Yeah, it's uncanny.
She hits the uncanny valley thing really well. Should we go into spoilers?
Yeah,
because there's some things that I want to talk about that are at the end of the movie.
Listen.
Spoilers. One of the things that struck me about this movie earlier, I was talking about how it really turns out to be Ava's story, and the reason is that when we get to the third act, what happens is that you figure out how everything kind of fits together. And the way that I've explained it to myself, the way that it makes the most sense to me, is that it's a fairy tale where Ava is the princess, Domhnall Gleeson, the Gleeson guy, he is the White Knight, and Oscar Isaac is the dragon. But in this version, basically what happens is that the princess uses the knight and then slays the dragon herself and escapes. It was something that occurred to me later, but I think that was sort of key to helping me come around to this movie a lot. Not that I ever didn't like it, but it kind of resonated with me more after I thought about it that way.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, you know, it leaves you with this conflicted feeling.
Because she leaves Domhnall Gleeson to die. She kills Oscar Isaac, and then she leaves Domhnall Gleeson to die because this is a nitpick that I have, but Oscar Isaac's house is designed as a fire hazard where if there's an emergency, then it locks you in instead of letting you out. I don't know why. Doesn't make any sense. They also use key cards.
Male entitlement?
Whatever. Anyway, sorry. I'm going off on a tangent. Just accept
that
it
happens.
Wasn't
it just to keep his stuff in? Isn't that the whole point? Nobody can get out on their own, or
but
nobody can
her
take
argument is
out.
Like, what if it's an emergency, not just a power failure?
No,
I get
what you're
saying.
Fire
hazard. There are laws about this kind of thing. I'm not clear that they're in the U.S.
I like that your plot hole is fire hazard.
His character does not abide by the laws.
That's true.
That's really the lesson here, guys.
But besides that, there's a lot
don't
of
don't fuck
really
with fire hazards.
Yes. Besides that, there's a lot of really interesting kind of, like, gender dynamic stuff going on in this movie, even though it's only two male characters and one female character, so much of this movie is kind of colored by the assumptions that the male character have about this robot because she looks like a female, even though the only reason that she's female is because one of them purposely designed her that way.
We are overlooking another female character, though.
There is, oh yes, there's also another female Kyoko. Robot who is a little bit less, what is the word?
Well, it's interesting.
Fully actualized, I guess, Ava. Yeah. She's, like, kind of like an earlier model. One of the horrifying things that's revealed later on is that Ava is the latest in a really long string of models, and the previous ones have all been destroyed.
Yeah, it's a whole Bluebeard scenario, and it's in a reveal scene that's pretty fantastic. But yeah, I like, just as a kind of final thought, I like the ending because it's not a happy ending, but it's not totally a tragic ending.
It's a happy ending if you understand that it's Ava's story. It's a sad ending if you think of it as
Again,
Mr. Gleason's story.
It reminds me of Snowpiercer, where you're like, I feel good about this. Like, I don't know.
My God, I didn't know your voice could go that high.
You're welcome, everyone listening on headphones.
If only that could be a pull quote. Soon pull quotes will just be like GIFs or little vines of us, and it'll be Christy's gonna get all of them because she's the most animated of the bunch.
Oh, what a horrible trailer that would be. Just critic GIFs of like.
That'd be kind of hilarious, actually. That's not a bad idea.
We'll call in our PR friends on this. That'll go over great.
But any final thoughts before we wrap up the review?
It's amazing. Go see it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think. It's hard to recommend seeing it because, like, I walked out kind of feeling like, I didn't need to see that. I didn't really take anything from it. But it's also not a bad movie, so I don't want to give people the impression that it sucks. I think if how we've described it kind of sounds like your thing, you might be into it. But I just didn't feel as much as most other people did.
I loved it, but I think that, to Perry's point, it's more of a cerebral experience than, like, a visceral or an emotional one. So if you prefer visceral and emotional type experiences, then this might not be your favorite thing ever, but it is very well crafted, so you might still appreciate it the way Perry does. I personally loved it and think you should see it.
Thank you for speaking on my behalf.
I think you should see it. I think you should see it in theaters, and then when it comes out, rent it again, and you'll get to get the rewatch quality that I had, which was really fun.
And then your voice might get as high as Christie's when you get as
excited
as she does.
Then you will only talk up here from sheer excitement.
On that note, let's move on to the last section of the show, the game section. Christine, yeah. It's all you.
Let's dive into
games. You have to
do
it all in that voice, though.
No.
No one's going to stick around for the game.
Everyone will hate that. And I can't. I have to do an impression for our game section.
Ah, true.
Yeah. All right. So last week's game was we showed you this Bond picture and asked for a caption. And our winner was... Ben Millett at Ben Millett, who picked step in time, never need a reason, never need a rhyme, step in time, you step in time. Which, if you don't know
I'm
that
so
reference.
Glad you did that.
Yeah. Guys, yeah. Bert was one of my first crushes, so Ben, you get me. And so this week. So is that weird? All right. This week, we decided to play Fuck, Marry, Kill. And after much debate, the figures of Fuck, Marry, Kill are all Oscar Isaac characters. So, Fuck, Marry, Kill. Inside Llewyn Davis, Ex Machina, and Sucker Punch. So that's Llewyn Davis, Nathan, or Blue Jones. So we don't just want who you would fuck, marry, and kill, because that's not that interesting. We also want just a brief Twitter-friendly explanation of why. Anybody want to give their picks?
Well, I guess I would definitely have to kill the guy from Sucker Punch, because that guy is straight up evil. I would kill the guy from Sucker Punch. I would marry Nathan from Ex Machina, because he is rich and would probably build me a robot boyfriend before we got divorced, and this all sounds great. The fire hazard thing with the house is a little bit of an issue, but hopefully nothing bad will happen. And then I would fuck Oscar Isaac's character in Inside Llewyn Davis, but as Carey Mulligan repeatedly warns him, I would make him wear two condoms and wrap it in electrical tape.
Nice. Okay, I would also kill the guy from Sucker Punch. He's just too rapey for my tastes. I would fuck Nathan from Ex Machina, because the way he can dance, I'm on board. And I'd probably marry Llewyn Davis. A good brood works for me.
All right, I'm definitely sticking with killing the character from Sucker Punch because, yeah, he's a freaking psychopath. I'm a little conflicted about this one, and I think I'm going to say I would marry the crazy billionaire and just, I guess, fuck the guy who leaves the cat. Because I would just never leave a guy who leaves a cat in a car like that.
That is the perriest explanation I have ever heard in my entire life.
I really never got over that in that movie.
Clearly. Like
I could not enjoy anything that happened in the rest of the movie because he left the damn cat.
Why don't you just kill him? I mean, the guy...
The other guy is an absolute lunatic. You know what? Watch that end credit sequence with him and Carla Gugino singing that song and you're going to want to kill him too. No matter what.
That might be our weirdest game yet, guys, so please play along. You can tweet at us at Popcorn Prosecco, and if we like your tweet best, we'll read it on next week's show.
All right, so that's a wrap on episode 61. Like Christy said, catch us at Popcorn Prosecco on Twitter and reply to our contest there. And you can also find all of other contact information and where you can watch the show in the description section of this video, so check that out. And you can find all three of us all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to take it first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
You can find me at Christy Puchko, and I'm writing all over the place, including I'm doing some really fun Game of Thrones recaps for spinoff, and I got some Ex Machina interviews coming up. So go to decadentcriminals.com, and you'll get all of that right there.
And you can catch my writing on Collider.com. You can catch me on Twitter at PNemroff. And I'm also going to throw in a quick plug for an Orphan Black podcast I do with Meryl Barr, which just kicked off for the new season, which is starting in about a week or two now. So go listen to that Clone Club podcast. Enjoy. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.